Welcome to Lavender Later, where you can listen to the audio recordings of our weekly live streams, Lavender Live. If you want to catch the next live, we host them every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Eastern Time on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch. Each week, we're going to be bringing in an external expert guest to go deep on a specific topic within sales emails. We'll also be switching up the host every now and again from different members of the Lavender team. Please drop us a positive rating if you enjoy the content of these episodes, and don't forget to follow Lavender across all of your favorite social media channels. Today, super excited. Got a bit of a different topic. We're going to be talking about hiring. And to help me break it down, I've got Dan Fantasia, the CEO, founder, and president of Treeline, which is one of the leading sales-specific recruiting staffing firms in the nation. Welcome. How are you doing today?
Hey, well, good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Most welcome, Dan. Thanks so much for coming on and promising to share your wisdom with us today.
I'll do my best.
We like to avoid trying to bury the lead here. On Lavender Live. And so what I like to always ask my guests is, if there was one thing that you wanted to say today, let's not put it halfway through. Let's start with that. So I'm going to give you a soapbox and ask you, when it comes to hiring salespeople, what's the one thing that you're really passionate about that you'd like to tell everyone here today?
For me, it's helping people find the right fit. It's helping companies and people find the right fit because, you know, we've been doing this for 22 years. When you do that well, the company's happy, the candidate's happy, you get referrals, and you build a really a genuine brand that people enjoy working with.
Sounds like meaningful work, Dan. Appreciate you sharing that your kind of reason why behind it. Let's dive into more like tactical stuff. Folks who are looking to hire sellers, some advice for those folks there. So my first question would be, if a company is looking to hire, what should be their first couple of steps in that process of figuring out who they're looking for and then actually taking that job to market?
Yeah, that's a great question. So right now, you know, we've got a lot of companies starting to ramp up. They're looking to onboard sales representatives so they can at least get them ramped up in Q4 and focus on 2024 numbers. I mean, that's really what's happening. So if you're a company that is eager to hire or is in need of a hire, the first thing you have to do is make sure this is a priority. I think it seems so simple, Will, but it's so basic. But most companies, when we talk to them, they say it's a priority, but then they're closing business. They're working with their team. They, focused on their forecast, and all of a sudden hiring drops to, you know, a lower level priority. Until it's your top priority, as important as closing your next deal, it is a struggle to find top talent, because until you make it that important, you don't really focus on finding the individuals and the top sales athletes that can help you get your company to the next level.
That makes sense. So step one is, don't start looking for someone unless you know it's a priority, because otherwise you're just gonna drop off and other things are gonna come up. I always think about sales, both from a candidate's perspective, but also from a hiring company's perspective. Regardless of how they attracted the candidate, maybe they've been working for a staffing agency like yours, got great candidates delivered to them. Maybe they're just advertising jobs. Maybe the candidate's actually reached out to them directly, or they've had a referral. There's a balancing act between having a good hiring process, but also then maybe, you know, inaction, making it too long, or analysis paralysis, as I like to call it. What do you think the best hiring processes do right to make sure that they don't mishire someone, but they also don't stretch out the process and delay having a great seller on that team?
So I'm just going to, again, go back to the prioritizing. It has to be a number one priority. And the reason why it has to be a number one priority is because everyone that's involved in the interview process needs to be on the same page. That means that when you find an A player, you should have a process around moving them through your interview schedule quickly and effectively, right? So most companies, if you find someone that you really like, get them into process right away. And then for a talented organization that knows how to hire, they usually do it within about 2 weeks. Like, we guarantee almost every single one of our searches, Will, happens within 30 days or less. And so when we're working with an organization, again, we want to make sure it's a number one priority. And once we know it's a number one priority, then we focus on, you know, the job description, the search criteria. We go to market aggressively. And when we bring really talented individuals to your organization, we want to make sure that we already have an interview process mapped out and that it can move quickly and effectively. For some of our clients, they're so efficient that before they do an interview, they're already starting to schedule candidates into the next interviewee's or interviewer's calendar, right? They're that organized. So I'm going to interview, and if this goes well, I'm going to automatically put this person in to a second interview on Tuesday at 2 o'clock with, you know, Kate Miller. And so those companies are well positioned and poised to move candidates through the process quickly because they realize that top talent doesn't hang around. If you don't move quickly on them, they will find opportunities with your competition.
I've seen that happen all too much. Great candidates get missed out on because the hiring manager isn't willing to move fast enough, or they've got itchy feet, or they again, priorities come up. What I got to know, so a good process is fast, it's efficient. Like, what are the actual steps to make sure that you're not mishiring someone? Because let's be honest, that's a pretty expensive mistake to make. One, in not billing pipeline. If you bring someone on who's not closing deals, that's potential revenue. But also, salespeople aren't cheap these days. They've got base salaries. Oftentimes, they have a sign-on bonus. You might even guarantee some compensation for them for a little bit. So what is the steps that the company should be taking to make sure that they're vetting their candidates?
Yeah, usually what we recommend and coach our clients to do is develop a interview scorecard, right? An interview scorecard for companies to make sure that each person that's going through the process is on the same page, right? So that's important. Matter of fact, there's a resource page on our website that has a scorecard that you're welcome to download. But understanding that scorecard is critical. And then inside that scorecard, there's always two things that there's a bunch of things we recommend, but the two main things that I'd recommend today is, one, understanding your core values as a company. Because if you don't understand your core values and you don't interview for your core values, you actually, unfortunately, could potentially make a mishire. And that is when companies get into trouble, because they could have a decent producer that doesn't meet their core values. And now you're struggling to identify if this is a person that is built for the corporation or not. So that's number one. The second thing is to understand the key sales characteristics of your selling environment. And to understand the key selling characteristics, you need to look at some of your top producers and how the organization is built and who you're selling to. In other words, if you're a transactional sales environment and your average deal size is $10,000 and you close in 30 to 60 days, and you're interviewing candidates that are enterprise sales professionals that have a $1 million average deal size with a 18-month sales cycle, while they sound incredibly polished and they're very talented, when you interview those candidates, they're going to seem great, but they don't fit your selling environment. So as a result, when they join the organization, they seem awesome, but they can't handle the activity metrics required to be successful in a transactional environment. And vice versa, if you hire a transactional person for a enterprise or strategic environment, many times it doesn't work because they're just not built like that. So understanding your core values and understanding the sales characteristics for your selling environment are critical to being successful in hiring the right individual for your organization.
Beautiful, Dan. I love that little summary. I actually had a post about this recently. You often find these people coming from enterprise to startup or transactional, and it's such a different world that the catch up just isn't there sometimes, and vice versa, like you said. I am curious. And this is like the asking you what the meaning of life is. But how do you know? And I think this is especially important for founders or folks who are maybe growing a team for the first time. How do you know if someone's actually good at sales? Maybe they have that experience in the right places. They've got that transactional background and you're hiring for a more transactional role with those 30-day sales cycles and 10,000 average deal sizes. How do you actually get an idea if someone's actually got sales skills and can do the job?
We focus on track record. And by the way, track record from when they're early, very early in their career until now. But one thing you mentioned is to founders out there that are looking to build their sales organizations. This is where it gets challenging. And this is why founders tend to make mistakes. If it's a founder-led sales organization and the CEO is the number one sales rep in the organization, the challenge with scale around that is that the CEO or the founder does not sell like the sales team will. So when you go to hire a sales representative as a founder just trying to scale your team, and you say, well, this is just how I do it. Go do it and be successful. that person's going to fail. And they're going to fail because no one understands the sales model. They don't know how many calls it takes to get a meeting and how many meetings it takes to send a proposal and how many proposals it takes to get a deal. And the reason why they don't know that is because if you were to look at how the founder brings in revenue, it's through the board, it's through relationships, it's through network, it's all kinds of things that is not systematic or scalable. And so a lot of times founders get confused. They hire someone and say, just do what I do. You'll be successful. We need revenue. But in actuality, what we really need to do is we need to peel back the layers of the onion, understand and work through your sales model to understand how it works. And once you understand the metrics, the key performance indicators to be successful, then you can hire your second rep, your third rep, your fourth rep, and you have a scalable, systematic approach to how you build out your sales organization.
This makes a lot of sense. I see it all too often working in the world of startups. Founder, you know, maybe they're getting introduced to people by their VCs or their early stage investors, and then they're closing a lot of referral deals or people in their network. When they bring on a seller, they can't quite do that. It's not the same skill set. It's not the same type of selling, or they might already have a type of selling and the founder doesn't like that. So that's interesting. Do you believe they should be hiring reps before they hire a sales leader? This is just a side note here.
Depends on every company's different. It depends on their size and how much traction they've gotten. But a lot of times they'll need a salesperson first to work through the kinks, to fail quite often and just figure it out. Like there's what happens is, again, you first need to understand the metrics and the key performance indicators to get the job done, right? Without that data, it's almost impossible to figure out how your selling environment works. And so you typically need someone that can roll up their sleeves, get in there, make a lot of mistakes, and figure out how it works. Once you figure out how it works, then as a CEO, you can then there's functional accountability, because you know what activity is required to be successful. And so if you're not doing that activity, then you look at a sales rep and say, well, listen, the reason why you're struggling is because you're not meeting the activity metrics that are required to be successful in this role. If they're meeting the activity requirements, then maybe it's technique, maybe it's training, maybe it's coaching them up on how to sell. Maybe they need support from the CEO on calls. But basically, it's fully transparent. Everyone can see what's going on. The CEO, the sales representative, and they figure it out together. So typically, depending on the environment, it's hard to tell. Getting a salesperson first to understand and work through some of the kinks is usually the best way to start.
Great breakdown there. We need guinea pigs, basically. Obviously, someone who's willing to be a guinea pig as well, that type of person, is a slightly different character. So you mentioned hiring a scorecard, making sure you're bringing in the right people for what you're trying to get them to do, what type of selling environment is, the kind of deals that you're going to be closing, and if they've done that before. I'll make sure I link to that in the YouTube description and any other descriptions if you're listening to this on a podcast platform, so you'll be able to actually see and download that. What are some of the questions or maybe even assignments that hiring leaders should be using to measure potential aptitude of a sales rep that they're thinking about hiring?
Well, it's, you know, because we hire for so many different organizations and so many different industries, it's going to depend on the company. A highly technical, software-driven organization may require a specific technology. And without that technology, an individual can't be successful in the environment. And each environment is different. We have some companies that hire very high energy, driven, motivated, dynamic individuals. Well, those environments don't necessarily work in a highly technical engineering type of, you know, organization. And top producers aren't always that high energy, typical sales mentality. Right? Top producers work in all different types of environment, technical, non-technical, business, what have you. And so as a result, understanding that environment and those, again, those personality traits is what's crucial to making sure you find the right person for your organization.
You mentioned track record as one of the key indicators of someone's ability to potentially be successful in a similar environment. As a candidate, as a salesperson, previously, I suppose, I'm not anymore, but don't tell anyone. There are cases, and I hear these stories all the time, of people being sold a bill of goods by a company, coming on board and finding out that OTE was a lie, it's unattainable targets, they're not set up for success, they're not getting any coaching. However, I do also recognize that that problem can go both ways. A lot of the time when you're a company hiring a sales rep, you can be, someone can bend the truth about their past performance, make themselves feel better, maybe even put some false information on their resume. What are some ways that you can make sure, if you feel like someone's a good fit, you can make sure that you're not bringing on someone who's not going to be successful in the role?
For any organization that's looking to hire a salesperson and a talented individual, it makes no sense to deceive them on compensation or oversell them on compensation. And the reason why it makes no sense is because if you want to put all that time and effort and money into hiring just to have people leave your organization because you were dishonest, it is a waste of everyone's time. Right? What we find to be incredibly successful or effective is when we're interviewing with candidates and with companies and we're qualifying them. For the company, we're trying to figure out why it's such a great place to work and what the challenges are. And for the candidate, we're trying to explain why the company is such a great place to work and what those challenges are. And if those challenges are too great for you and it's not something you're interested in, then it's not the right fit. Right? But we can help companies sustain their sales force and candidates sustain their career by making sure that everyone is honest with each other. So they're not, there is no deceit and no one's overselling themselves or the opportunity. And when, as the middle person in this whole arrangement, it's a lot easier to take down the temperature and everyone's guard and talk through honestly about why this is a good fit for the company and for the individual so that it's a great match together. Now, we can be deceived and companies can be deceived by candidates potentially. What we like to do when we're interviewing with candidates is we like to understand the entire story, right? I mean, talented salespeople are creatures of habit. And so it's nice to see throughout their entire life, you will see accomplishments. The first accomplishment could be that they walked to their first job at 15 years old and they worked their butt off, or they were the captain of the baseball team or the field hockey team. And it's not because they were the number one athlete, it's because they worked the hardest for it. Or they played sports in college, worked full time and paid for their education. And then when they graduated college, they had their first job. You know, there is a track record of success, and a lot of this story is likely left off their resume, but it's things that we dive into to understand who our candidates are, how to represent them most effectively, and to make sure that we understand their story, they're truthful and looking for a great match in their career and not just another job. When we do all of that and grab all that information, we really help our companies hire effectively and we really help our candidates find, you know, the right fit.
Makes a lot of sense. I love that. So obviously, beyond just having a middleman, there is no point in deceiving if you're a candidate or if you're a hiring manager, because let's be honest, it's probably not going to work out.
Right. I mean, you can start the interview, right, Will, with, you know what, let's not consider this interview. Let's just have a conversation and we'll decide if this is a good fit for you and if it's a good fit for us. If it is, let's move forward.
Definitely. I've had some really good kind of conversations where they you know, a hiring manager has told me, hey, like, this is the reason why you might not want to work here just to start off, right? If these are deal breakers for you, then we can call off early here, but I just want to make sure you're up front so you know the situation here, which is hella immediately level set respect, right? Builds that trust. Are there any red flags that employers should be looking out for when hiring sales reps?
Yeah, I mean,
there were obviously red flags. What are the big ones? Tell me the classic ones that people tend to have the blinders on for.
Well, there's a lot. I mean, I think the best thing that you can do is while you're listening to a candidate talk about their successes, you should be running the math in your mind. In other words, if a person has a $1.2 million quota and their average deal size is $10,000, and they're saying they're at 200% of quota and they're at 2.4 million. I'd like to understand how. How is that possible? How did they get there, right? So what is the, does the math add up? I understand the story, and we this is when we qualify our candidates, we're looking for those red flags, reading between the lines. I know what you're telling me, but based on your selling environment, I just don't see how it happens. How, so how did you get there?
240 deals a year, right? Which is what?
Yeah, right.
20 deals a month. Wait, is that right? 20 deals a month. With an average, yeah.
With a sales cycle of 6 months. Well, yeah. Something's off here. It doesn't make sense. So the red flags are, just explain to me, show me how you do it. That's all. And if they can't describe how to do it, then you have to wonder, well, why? What's off? You don't have to impress me. Just tell me the truth. What? How does this work? I need to represent you accurately. Talk to me about what the selling environment looks like so I can help you find a good fit. If I don't want to waste your time and find a bad fit. That's the worst.
Ask the right questions. Listen, try and do the math. Generally, sometimes things will start to seem off if they are. What you've mentioned one already, which is not making it a priority, being slow in their hiring decisions. I guess another one would be not being transparent with candidates about how much they could be earning. What are some of the other common mistakes that you see employers and hiring teams making when it comes to bringing on new sellers?
They don't understand the market. So most of the time, we'll talk to a company. And they say they know exactly what they need. We'll go to market based on their exact criteria. And as we bring candidates back to them and share data with them, they really start to learn about the market, the candidate pool, and where they fit and if they're attractive or not, if their compensation is competitive or not. If it's not competitive, then they either need to raise their compensation or they need to reduce their requirement. I mean, we for every single search, we are in with our clients very closely, helping them understand the market, manage the process, because many times while they think they understand and know exactly what their company needs, they typically do not. Or maybe what they want is not interested and doesn't want them. And so there is a lot to figure out, you know, for every search in every location and region to help companies identify and understand what top talent looks like and how to attract and hire them, basically.
So understand their requirements, but also like potentially working with someone who's going to help you understand those. I used to, way back when I was a young sprout, I used to work in recruitment, and that was the classic issue. Hey, we're looking for someone with 20 years experience. We're paying 90K. I'm like, you know, back then I wasn't cold enough to say like that's stupid, but obviously, like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was going to ask, right now the market's a little bit different, at least especially in the sector that Lavender plays in, which is the tech sector. Have you noticed any major changes that are taking place in 2023 that affect the world of hiring?
So far 2023 has been a strong year from us, but the summer months have not. These two, July and August have been sluggish. It's not that companies aren't hiring, they're slow. Usually we talk to a company, we guarantee we're going to submit your first candidate in 3 days, because we want to make sure you know how important it is to us to drive traction and basically deliver for you. And so we want to get things moving right away. So usually a company would say, I have an opening, let's get started. I would talk to a company today and we would be doing a kickoff call tomorrow and we'd be searching on the following day. Companies now are slow. Everything is just drawn out. Like, no one seems like they're in a rush in July and August. And that's not atypical. Typically, that's what happens. Usually we're starting to see a pickup going into September. And people are really thinking about Q4 and really 2024. We want to have our headcount in place to make our revenue numbers for 2024.
So people are slowing down the summer months. Maybe they're European. Maybe they've gone on 2 month vacation. I know I wish I could. They just take August off, right? Part of the problem. Dan, we're nearing time here. You already mentioned the scorecard that people can find on your website, which I'll make sure people link to. Where else can people find you? Is there anything you'd like to plug naturally? You sound like an expert on the topic, so I'd recommend people reach out and talk to you. But is there anything else you'd like to make sure you mention here?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, if you're looking for a new opportunity, it's free of charge. You're crazy not to be talking to us. And if you're looking to hire elite sales professionals to join your company, give us a ring. You know, visit us at treelineinc.com. Contact us or contact me directly. I'm always happy to have a conversation and brainstorm on what's happening in the market, what companies are doing to hire the right talent, and really, you know, tackling Q4 and 2024.
Beautiful. Make sure to check that out, folks. Dan, thanks so much for jumping on today.
And Will, thank you. I appreciate your time. This is great.
Thank you so much for listening right to the end here. If you'd like to tune into our next show live so you can be involved in the chat, then be sure to check out our LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Twitch pages every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. If you prefer to listen later, then be sure to subscribe to this podcast to catch every single episode.